Welcome to the Fiscal Physical Podcast. Join us each week as we sit down with the founder of Alchemy Wealth Management and author of Your Fiscal Physical, Ryan Nelson. Tune in to gain valuable insights and practical tips as we simplify complex financial concepts into digestible lessons. From budgeting to retirement planning, this podcast is your go-to resource for mastering financial literacy.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Fiscal Physical Podcast. I am joined by the founder of Alchemy Wealth Management, Ryan Nelson, also a published author from the book Your Fiscal Physical, Seven Keys to Becoming Financially Fit. Find that on Amazon. Ryan, how is it going on this lovely day?
It is going well. How's your day going?
Not too bad, man. Can't complain. You know, I'm any day that I get to learn something about an industry or a topic that I don't really know about, I kind of just soak that stuff up like a sponge normally.
Absolutely.
Unless my wife's telling me about some sort of Love is Blind show, in which case I just whoop right over my head. So, but here we are excited to dive into this week's topic of a mutual fund versus an EFT.
ETF.
Oh my gosh, an ETF. Episode 13, we spoke about mutual funds. Episode 14, we spoke about ETFs. And we kind of broke down the high level behind each one, the pros, the cons, kind of what goes into them specifically. Yep. Now today we're going to kind of compare and contrast those and see, you know, what the difference are, kind of why somebody would invest in either one of those. So I'm going to go ahead and let you take this away here and give us some insight.
Perfect. Like you said, if exchange traded funds, ETFs, and mutual funds are new to you, those last two episodes that we did the last couple of weeks, so that'd be episode 13 and 14, I believe, would probably be great places to kick this off, and this conversation will probably make a little more sense after that. But let's touch on some of these differences. So some of the big differences are, and one thing I think we did not mention in the previous episodes were with some mutual funds, mm-hmm. there's these minimum buy quantities. And so there might be a particular mutual fund out there where it says you have to buy $10,000 worth to be able to get in. That's not typically the case with exchange traded funds. So it's just a lower barrier of entry. With mutual funds, though, I've seen those have started to decline. So the barrier to entry is, I think, getting smaller and smaller. But nonetheless, still, if there was a particular mutual fund out there you wanted to buy, you just didn't have enough money to get in. I mean, I've seen some as high as like $100,000.
Wow.
You just wouldn't have the cap. If you don't have the capital to get in, you can't get in. And mm-hmm. so that mutual fund just would be off the table for you, right? There's also the conversation of active versus passive. So again, for this conversation, we're going to assume mutual funds are active. So we're going to compare actively managed mutual funds to passively managed exchange traded funds.
Okay.
I want to circle back on this a little bit later and talk about some more of the pros and cons on that. But to keep going, from a tax perspective, ETFs give you a little more tax control.
Mm-hmm.
With mutual funds, you could get some capital gains distributions, and you wouldn't it's harder to plan for them. You're going to typically get them in December. You're not going to typically know exactly what they're going to be. So it just makes tax planning a little bit more challenging. So mutual funds, a little more challenging from tax planning. ETFs, a little bit easier, a little bit more control from a tax planning perspective. From an expense perspective, we had said in the previous episodes, average cost of ETF is roughly 0.16%.
Mm-hmm.
Average cost of a mutual fund is somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.5% to 1%. So let's err on the, mutual fund costs have been coming down over the last couple decades. So let's assume that average cost is like 0.5%. So 0.16% to 0.5%. That means exchange traded funds are about a third of the cost of a mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty significant. So that's definitely a consideration there. And then there's how these funds trade as well. So as a refresher, exchange traded funds trade intraday. So they trade on a market exchange. So, and they trade effectively like immediately. So when you place a buy or a sell, assuming the market's open, that trade is getting executed nearly immediately. Mutual funds, those, all the buys and sell requests are getting kind of pooled together and executed after market hours at the end of the day. You know, I don't know how realistic an example like this is, but the kind of the classic example in this industry is, you know, if the market was crashing and you wanted to put in a sell order at 10 a.m., well, in an ETF, you could get it in at 10 a.m. A mutual fund, you wouldn't get it in at 10 a.m. It would just get pooled to the end of the day, and you'd get the same kind of trade value as the person who got their trade in the second before market close, even though the market might have been a lot theoretically lower at that time, right? Now, again, like, how realistic does that happen? Even just like saying that kind of gives me a little bit of a cringe. Like, if you're selling while the market's down, you're not staying the course, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think it's probably a wise investment strategy to be trying to like time that market and buying and selling. So like if the market's going up or going down anyways, but nonetheless, it is an example. There is truth to it. So it should be a consideration when you're buying, you know, if you're trying to decide, do I want a mutual fund or do I want an exchange traded fund? You know, the reality is exchange traded funds, ETFs do trade intraday. So they execute almost immediately when the market's open. Mutual funds, kind of the buy and sell orders get pooled and executed end of day. So it is a consideration. But let's go back up to that active versus passive conversation I had mentioned.
Definitely.
So I think a lot of the differences between these are kind of black and white, like the tax implications, the costs, right? A lot of these things, does it trade intraday? Does it not, right? A lot of these are just kind of black and white. Like, it's easy for you to tell like which one you favor, you know, depending on your value system. But now, is it active managed or passively managed? That one's a little trickier. Like, I think that's a lot more gray area than black and white. And, you know, maybe half the people I talk to, they like actively managed funds.
Sure.
Half the people I talk to, they like passively managed funds. And so just out of curiosity, like after the last couple of weeks of these conversations, what's your initial thoughts? Like, what would you gravitate most towards?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because I've been thinking about that as far as the last week's episode of what. And I really like the low cost, but I get the diversification of an ETF.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think that is super cool that I'm able to get, you know, I don't really know how, like, I guess the active versus passive would really affect me specifically, but I, from what I've learned, I feel like I'm like, oh wow, like an ETF just kind of speaks to me of something that kind of like similar, like with a Roth versus a traditional IRA.
Right.
For some reason, I'm just like, I kind of think about my situation. I'm like, I think that would be more beneficial to me overall.
So what about this? Play a little devil's advocate.
Sure.
So let's say you say, okay, I like ETFs, I think. And so you say, okay, I'm going to buy an S&P 500 ETF. So you say, all right, I'm going to put my Roth IRA in an S&P 500 ETF. And let's say a mutual fund manager comes to you and says, oh, wait, you're investing in the S&P 500 ETF. That just passively buys all the 500 companies in the ETF. Why don't you buy my S&P 500 mutual fund?
Sure.
I'm investing in effectively the same companies, but I'm just buying and selling different proportions of each, trying to get better returns. And 10 out of the last 10 years, I've outperformed the S&P 500 ETF, even after costs.
Huh.
Do you want to now, like, you wanted exposure to that ETF. You're getting that same exposure. Would you prefer to invest in the mutual fund?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That is something that I don't know. Actually, I don't know like what the answer to that is.
Yeah, it's a hard question, right? And so that'd be the difference. Like the passive investment is just, you're just buying the ETF, right? You're buying effectively the market. The active manager could do better than that, could do worse than that. We don't necessarily know, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not going to just do exactly the same as the market if they're doing some, if they're tinkering in there somehow, probably doing something better or something worse. The question becomes, can an active manager outperform the passive investment? And there's a lot of debate about that. I don't know that there is a clear answer. One thing I will warn listeners to kind of keep in mind is that example I just gave, I see happen a lot, is so again, maybe a mutual fund will say, hey, I outperformed the S&P 500 for the last 10 years. I must know what I'm doing. And I would say, does that really mean they know what they're doing? And let me give you an example here to kind of put a little bit more concreteness to this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's remove ourselves from this example. We'll kind of go into a story and then we'll go back and apply this to this. So imagine I had a quarter and I can flip this thing heads or tails, right?
Sure.
And I think flipping a coin is like pretty much 50-50. I don't think there's a lot of skill involved in flipping a coin, right?
Right.
But so let's say I come to you and I say, hey, Aaron, dude, I just figured out some strategy where I think I can flip more tails than heads.
Ooh.
And you're like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. But you're probably in the back of your head saying, no, you're crazy.
Yeah.
There's no way you can flip. Like, it's just pure chance. Like, you know, like you can't do it. If I was then to flip a coin 10 times and got 6 tails and 4 heads, would you then believe me that I figured out some strategy, or is that just random chance?
I would err towards random chance.
I would think so too. Yeah. Right? And so now let's take that same kind of coin flipping mentality. And let's say that I was in front of a symposium of people, that we had 1,000 people in attendance, where they all have a quarter. And I say, hey, everybody, we want to see who the best tail flipper is here. So everybody pulls out their quarter. I say, okay, everybody, flip your coin. So we have 1,000 people. They all flip their coin. Roughly 500 of them will be tails. Roughly 500 of them will be heads, right?
Right.
So I say, okay, everybody who's heads, go ahead and sit down. You're not good tail flippers.
Sure. Yeah.
But I say, you 500 people, you guys are good. You guys might be good tail flippers. Everybody, flip your coin again. And so all 500, you know, so round two, there's 500 people. They all flip their coin. About half of them are going to be heads, half are going to be tails, right? So 250 are heads, 250 are tails. And so I say, okay, you 250 heads people, you sit down, you're not good tail flippers, right?
Yeah.
But now we have 250 people who just flipped 2 tails in a row. Oh, that's pretty impressive. So now we go round three. I say, hey, everybody, you 250 people who are left, flip your coins, and half of them are going to get tails, yeah. Half are going to get heads, right? And so this is all just random chance. But so at the end of round three, right? So we started with 1,000 people. At the end of round one, we had 500. End of round two, we had 250 people. End of round three, we had, wait, what did I say? 1,500, 250 at the end of
125,
round. 125. Yep. And then 125. And let's just keep applying this. So at the end of the next round would be, So end of round one would be 500. End of round two would be 250. Three would be 125. Four would be, let's call it 120.
So like 60 people. Sure.
Yeah. And then end of round five would be 60 people. End of round six would be 30 people. End of round seven would be 15 people. End of round eight would be 7 people. End of round nine would be like 4-ish people. End of round 10 would be 2-ish people.
Sure.
You know, so you get through these 10 rounds, maybe you still have 2 people who have now flipped 10 tails in a row.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you say, God, out of 1,000 people, these 2 people could stand up and honestly say, out of 1,000 people, I'm one of 2 people left who've been able to flip 10 rounds in a row.
Right.
Does that mean they're somehow better at flipping heads or tails? No, it just means they get just pure percentages. If you get 1,000 people in a room, purely statistically speaking, you should have 1 or 2 people at the end of this exercise that's flipped all tails. It doesn't mean they're good at flipping tails. It just means that's how distributions work.
Right.
You would have, if you did the same exercise, you'd have a couple of people who flipped tails every time, or heads every time too. And so then when you now apply this back to the conversation we were having, if you had a mutual fund manager outperform the S&P 500, you know, 10 years in a row, does that mean they know what they're doing? Or just statistically, wouldn't we think if there's 1,000 mutual fund managers, 1 or 2 of them would, outperform 10 years in a row? Does it actually mean they have a strategy that's going to outperform the market long term? I don't know. I don't think that just looking at their historic performance actually tells us that there's proof that they figured out a system to outperform moving forward, right? Also, you can't dismiss that. Maybe they actually are better at picking stocks. And you can't just then artificially dismiss that and say, no, there's no way you're better because it's just pure statistics, right? But you just don't have enough information, right? And so what I find a lot of people getting caught up in is they'll look at past performance and they'll say, oh, I found this fund that you know, does blah, 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 or is, you know, outperformed the market the last 3 years, or, you know, has only had one down year in the last 10 years. It's like, well, yeah, but is that just a you know, a normal distribution from normal statistics, and they just were part of the average, or were they actually doing something that made them outperform, right? And I think most of the time we just don't have enough information to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have enough information to answer that question, maybe you fall back on like things like cost and you say, okay, well, you know, I can't really prove that this other manager is actually outperforming. It might just be random chance. In the next 10 years, they might underperform. You might flip 10 tails in a row and then 10 heads in a row. Right. Yeah. And if that's the case, you'd want to, you know, at least just be going with the market and, you know, being in a fund with lower costs. So I think there's no right or wrong answer here. Again, I think it comes back to kind of value system. But when you're looking at this, you know, some people will resonate with having an active manager. They'll say, no, I think I can find a manager who can find a skill to outperform. Perfect. Then an actively managed mutual fund might be a good solution for them. And they'd be okay paying higher fees because they think it's worth it for their performance. Somebody else who says, no, I don't think there are mutual fund managers out there who can outperform, or at least I wouldn't have the data to be able to pick which ones are doing it. So if I'm picking just a random person that maybe is just has outperformed in the past just due to random chance, I'd prefer just to stick with the lower costs and I know what I'm getting, as opposed to kind of gambling on somebody paying them more for maybe no outperformance.
Right.
So I think that's kind of the difference between that passive and actively managed. So some people say, yes, I want the lower cost. Some people say, no, I think the active manager can outperform. Again, I don't know that there's any definitive right or wrong way to do that. Different people have different value systems and different beliefs around that.
Yeah, no, it really harkens back to a lot of things with finance, man, are personal, and they're specific to your, and you referenced on a previous podcast, it's more of an art than a science sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I feel like that's something that's you think about finances, you think about numbers, and normally numbers are pretty concrete, and numbers don't lie, people say.
Yep.
But in a case when you're dealing with, you know, different individuals and their personal goals, like it really is that art versus like that science. And it's so different to me that it's kind of, it seems counterintuitive almost sometimes.
Yeah. And it's hard to know, like in that example, again, you know, if I was that individual who at the end of that experiment flipped 10 tails in a row, it like, I might start believing, man, I'm a good tails flipper.
Yeah.
Like, I think I figured it out. Like, I'm trying to flip it exactly 2 feet high, and like somehow I got this strategy where it's coming down, bouncing five times and landing on, you know, and then it's like, yeah, so these people oftentimes have positive intentions, right? They like, but how do you know was that strategy actually working, or was it random chance? Like, how would you possibly know that? It's just interesting.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And it's, yeah, just a little fun fact here. Every year, for the Super Bowl, I bet on what the coin flip is going to be. I've probably 7 years in a row, I've gotten it wrong. I'm a terrible picker of what it's going to be.
So maybe you should start a mutual fund for Super Bowl bets, and then people can just buy the inverse of what.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just fade me, if you will.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's awesome, right? Well, this is a good place to pause here. We'll be back on the other side of the break. Hopefully everybody can digest the difference between a mutual fund and ETF, kind of figure out what's best for you. And we'll be back with a palate cleanser on the other side of this.
And now to put the personal in personal finance.
All right, we are back here for a personal section, and Ryan, you might know this about me. I enjoy a good trivia question.
I sure do, as
do you. So I have one here for you. Right now, what is the world's longest direct flight currently? Which city to which city? And if you don't get that, no problem. I'll give you the mileage and then the time, and see if that helps at all.
Oh, it won't help. I won't.
Okay, cool.
I won't know that. I mean, I'm going to go out on, let's start with time for me. I'm,
sure.
16 and a half hours?
18 and a half hours. So pretty close. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Is Australia still one of them?
Australia is not one of them.
Okay.
But a U.S. city is one of them, I'll tell you that.
Let's say, New York to Singapore?
That's exactly what it is. It's New York to Singapore.
Nice. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. 18 and a half hours is the longest. That's incredible. How many miles do you think that is?
That'd probably be, God, is that 6,000 miles? Let me think about it. That must be, I know this is great podcast.
Yeah, obviously, dead air.
God, I want to, no, that must be more than 6,000 miles.
It is more than 6,000 miles.
Yeah, I would guess that's got to be, almost 16,000 miles.
A little less than, it's 10,000.
Okay.
It's 9,585. So I just rounded up to 10,000 just to make it easy math, because we love that on this podcast. But
yeah.
Can you imagine being in the air for 18 and a half hours?
Be brutal. Tough. That's an entire day.
That is an entire day that you're spending on that plane. And I don't sleep very well on planes myself. So like, I'm just, I'd have to walk around, do a workout.
That's like, two work days back to back, like
yeah,
like, slam together. Yeah,
just I'm stoked you got the cities though. Like I was like that because I always thought Australia was one of obviously something I've always thought about. But
right.
when I pulled that up, I was like, oh, nice. So
yeah,
cool, man. Well, yeah, always fun playing the trivia questions with you. And sometimes when you get the drawbacks are when you don't know the question ahead of time, you kind of just sit and hem and haw for a little bit, but yeah, which everybody should do. But anyway, hopefully you guys learned something on this episode, you know, whether it be that it's a 9,500-mile flight between New York and Singapore or the difference between an ETF and a mutual fund. You know, really appreciate everybody tuning in, listening. Definitely check us out wherever you get your podcasts. And Ryan, I'll let you play us out here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And as always, stay the course.
Thank you for joining us for the Fiscal Physical Podcast. Until next time, happy listening. And as always, stay the course. If you have a question or topic suggestions, please email us at podcast@alchemywealth.com. If you enjoyed today's discussion, subscribe to the podcast to ensure you never miss an episode. And consider leaving us a rating and review on your favorite platform. This helps other listeners like you find the show. For more resources, you can visit Alchemy Wealth Management's website at www.alchemywealth.com or find your physical, the book on Amazon. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that personal finance is just that, personal. Please don't take anything we say as advice. The preceding content is for informational and entertainment purposes only. It's not an offer or a solicitation, nor should it be construed or relied upon for tax, legal, or investment advice. It doesn't consider your personal financial situation or objectives and may not be suitable for you.